Sfarim will be available for sale over there. Many of you have or have used or have read some of them, and the rest are over there, so please remember that.
Bail yourself.
Thank you very much.
Where do I begin? See, last year, Rabbi Turetsky was very kind to let me. I was trying to start an organization, I was trying to start a program to increase knowledge about Eretz Yisrael and give a mini course in all the different seminaries and yeshivot about Eretz Yisrael. And Shalvim for Women was one of the only institutions who agreed to let me in. I always speak once a year in almost every single yeshiva, but to allow me to give a four-part course, which is really a summation of an entire year-long course, which is really basically with the book that's coming out tomorrow. I just want to prove to you that it's coming out tomorrow. I got the cover today. I was hoping it would be ready, but it wasn't. But I took a cover like as a, just a show and tell. I'll explain what it is, but basically, I've been dedicating myself to this topic for a very long time, and I put together a whole course on the importance of living in Eretz Yisrael. And what this book is really gonna do is put it all together. It's a daily dose of Eretz Yisrael, so it's really most of the sources, the most important sources on the importance on the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz from many different perspectives, arranged in a daily limud. It has the Hebrew on one side, the English on the other side, a little bit of an introduction, an explanation, a little bit of a conclusion, and that's what the book's going to be. Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm going to bring it by some other day to offer it for sale. But what we're going to discuss today is the time period that we find ourselves in. 2 days ago was Yom HaShoah, and in 3-4 days from now will be Yom HaAtzmaut, Yom HaZikaron first, and then Yom HaAtzmaut. This is the Chag Ha, or the month of the Chagim of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, one of my colleagues once said he heard from someone that the month of Iyar, Aleph Yud, Yud Reish, stands for Aleph Yud is Eretz Yisrael, Yud Reish is Yerushalayim. That is actually how it's abbreviated sometimes. Yud Reish, Yerushalayim. That's what Yom Atzmut, Yom Yerushalayim, all in the month of Iyar. The month of Iyar is a very special month, certainly in recent history. But it really all starts with 2 days ago, with Yom HaShoah. And why is Yom HaShoah so close to Yom HaAtzmaut? Well, you know, I'm sure that's a big machloket. Really, the religious world wanted it to be on Asara B'Teveit, Yom HaKadish HaKlali. We really don't like having kelmales and sad things done in the month of Nisan. Okay, it's probably not the greatest, but the fact is that most of Am Yisrael does mark that day as Yom HaShoah. And I believe that the reason that maybe, divinely inspired that there should be Yom HaShoah prior to Yom HaAtzmaut is because there is a very clear correlation between the Holocaust and Yom HaAtzmaut and the establishment of the State of Israel. It's a very dangerous thing to give reasons for the Holocaust, and that's not what I'm going to do. But at least I can quote one of the Gdolei Yisrael who himself lived through and unfortunately was killed in the Holocaust and see what he has to say for why he believes that the Holocaust happened. At least one possible explanation. But before we do that, we have to give a little bit of a background. You know, if you look on your sheets, let's just start right away with the sheets, which I, for some reason, can't find mine. Okay, someone, is there an extra one somewhere? Thank you, sorry. I thought I left one here, okay. you look at the English side, okay? Rav Aryeh Kaplan. You ever read any of his books? I'm sure you have many of his books here. He was one of the most brilliant minds of the last half century, I would say. And he was also, very importantly, not a religious Zionist. He did not go to Merkaz Arav. He studied in Mir. He got smicha from some of the greatest gedolim. But he was, as I said, a very brilliant mind. And in one of his books, small little pamphlets called The Real Messiah, which is basically a refutation of Christian missionaries, he has a chapter called The Real Messiah, meaning, okay, this is why you know who is not the Messiah, so what's the real Messiah going to be like? And in it, he writes many very fascinating things, but this quote, I know almost by Balpe, I've probably quoted it hundreds of times. Other generations have expected the Messiah's imminent appearance on the basis of the forced interpretation of one or two prophecies. Whereas we are living through the entire range of Messianic tradition. Now, only someone like Rav Aryeh Kaplan, who knows the entire range of Torah, can say that I've seen it all. I've seen all the Gemaras, all the Midrashim, all the Zohars, every Sefer you can imagine. And I'm telling you, we are living through the entire range of Messianic tradition, often coming to pass with uncanny literalness. If you keep your eyes open, you can almost see every headline bringing us a step closer to this goal. Now, we really don't have to go very far to prove that we are living through the ultimate redemption. But just in case some people, are not observant, they're not paying attention to what's going on and what's been going on in the last 100 years. So one of the books that I translated is called The Question of Redemption. Can the modern state of Israel be the beginning of redemption? And the author, the big Talmud Chacham, was getting a lot of questions. He was on a sabbatical, he was on Shlichut, and he was getting a lot of questions because he was clearly religious Zionist. He said, how can you believe that this state is the redemption when it was started by secular Jews and it's anti-religious and all these different problems? So basically, he decided to collect all the questions and divide them into chapters and give the answers. And the answers are a lot better than the questions. See, a lot of people think that, maybe that's where my other piece of paper went. I'm glad the air conditioner's on, don't worry. What was I up to? So a lot of people think that the burden of proof is on us. You know, the Haredi world, that's the main Torah world, and they certainly know all the sources. But the burden of proof is on us to prove that we're right. But in reality, the burden of proof is really on them. Because the simple facts on the ground are clearly in our favor. The way he puts this in the 15th chapter here, when he discusses this exact issue, how can we be so sure that this is truly the redemption? So he starts by saying it as follows. Before answering these questions in detail, we must first explain that simple logic indicates that we are living in the era of redemption. The Jewish people were exiled from their land 2,000 years ago and have been subjugated and oppressed by the nations of the world ever since. Our prophets assured us that we would eventually return to the land and regain sovereignty over it. And that's what happened. I mean, you have to be blind not to see that that's what happened. It is clear. You see, the problem is that we were all born, even me, all born into a world, in other words, I'm not 69 years old yet, that we're going to celebrate Yom HaTzmut number 69 this year. And we were all born into a world where there is a state of Israel. So to us, we take it for granted. Of course. Of course, the Jewish people have sovereignty over their ancient homeland. Well, no, it's not really so simple. It wasn't like that for most of our history. And the fact that it's returned, and the fact that Jewish people in tremendous numbers have returned to Eretz Yisrael, almost half the Jewish people live here already. You don't really have to prove it. I don't have to prove it from sources, although I have that also, and I have many, many proofs, especially in my new book, many, many proofs that we are clearly living through the ingathering of the exiles and many other signs of redemption. But I want to focus today on one of the signs of redemption which are not so pleasant. The ingathering of the exiles, that's fantastic. Baruch Hashem, Jewish people are coming back to their land. But Chazal also foresaw a very negative sign of the redemption, and that is the troubles that would precede the coming of, or at least the beginning of the redemption. And there are many, many sources that indicate this. Let's quickly look on the Hebrew side now. Source number two. Just a little sampling. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Im ra'ita dor shemitmaid va'olech. If you see a generation that's diminishing, continuously getting less and less, chakelo, wait for Mashiach. Shene'amar ve'et am ani toshia. Hashem will save a poor nation. Poor meaning poor in numbers. Or another statement, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Im ra'ita dor shetzarot rabot ba'ot alav. If you see a generation that many troubles are coming upon it, kinahar, like a river, chakelo, wait for Mashiach. And he brings a pasuk to prove it. So much so, did Chazal understand that the period immediately before the redemption is going to be very, very hard for the Jewish people. So much so, that in source number three, there are two Amoraim who basically said, we of course want Mashiach to come, but we don't want to see him. Look at source number three. Amar Ula, Yeti v'lo ichmine. Let him come, but let me not see him. V'chein amar Rabba, Yeti v'lo ichmine. Rabba said the same thing. Let him come, but let me not see him. Meaning they understood that obviously there is going to be, it's going to be a very difficult time for the Jewish people. And we're going to see in a minute why is that so. But first we're just establishing the facts. The facts clearly are that Chazal foresaw a very difficult time period prior to the redemption. One of the most explicit sources in this regard is source number five. The Midrash Tehillim says as follows, Davar Acher, Ya'ancha Hashem b'yom tzara. Hashem will answer you on a day of trouble. Mashal la'av v'ben. This can be compared to a father and a son. Shayu malchim b'derach, who were going on the way. V'nityagea ben, and the son got tired. V'amar la'av, heichan hi ha-medina. Where is the state, country, city? Medina can be translated many different ways, but it is very interesting that it uses specifically that word, not heichan ha'ir, but heichan hi ha-medina. Where's the medina that we're going to? Where's our destination? When are we going to get there? Are we there yet? Right? So, Amar lo, the father said, Bini, I don't want to have to answer you every 5 minutes. So therefore, Siman zeyehe biyadecha. I'm going to give you a sign. Im ra'ita beit hakvarot lefanecha. If you see a cemetery before you, harei hi ha-medina krova lecha, then you know that the medina, our destination, is close by. In other words, why? Why is that so? Because the cemeteries are built or made on the outskirts of the city. So if we're traveling to a city, so we're going to see the cemetery first. And that's the way you know that the Medina is almost there. Kach amar lema kadosh baruch hu l'Yisrael, so too. That's the mashal. What's the nimshal? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the Jewish people, Im ra'item et atzarot shetakfu etchem. If you see the troubles, takfu is from the word takef. Takef from yad, immediate. One after the other. Non-stop. If you see a time period with non-stop troubles, bo tasha'a tem nigalim. That's when you're going to be redeemed. Shene'amar ya'ancha Hashem b'yom tzara. Yisagev Hashem Elokei Yaakov. On this, based on a few of these sources that we saw, look now to the second side, the English side. There's a beautiful book by Rabbi Benjamin Black called Understanding Judaism, all about different concepts of Judaism, and he has a long chapter about the concept of Mashiach, and he writes, "What greater cemetery than the one formed in the mid-20th century, marking the destruction of 6 million of our people?" By the way, more up-to-date estimates are that it was really closer to 7 million. Although, you know, we've all grown up on 6 million, so we're never going to change that, but it really was closer to 7 million. What greater cemetery than the destruction of 6 million of our people? I assume many of you went to Poland this year, some kind of a heritage program or something, right? I went there 3 times, and I remember one of the guides saying, "You are standing in," we were, I think, in Birkenau, said, "You are standing in the biggest Jewish cemetery in the world." And it's certainly true about Birkenau because the remains of 1.5 million Jews are there. But all the more so, all of Poland, everywhere you go, it's a Jewish, one big Jewish cemetery. "If we have suffered many times in the past," he continues and says, "surely the scope and the horror of the Holocaust has no equal. If Chazal said that prior to the redemption will be a terrible trouble that the Jewish people are gonna face. Well, we've had a lot of persecution throughout our history. But has anything even come close to the Holocaust? Nothing. Is it merely coincidence that in 1945 we said Kaddish for 6 million and in 1948 we proclaimed Mazel Tov over the return of our homeland after almost 2,000 years of exile and dispersion? Had we been given the choice, perhaps we too would have said with Ula and Rabbah, 'Let the glorious day of return to the Holy Land and the dawn of redemption come, but may we not live to see it, so that we do not have to, we're not forced to endure the sight of what precedes it.'" In other words, yeah, after the fact, we know that there's a very clear correlation between the Holocaust and the State of Israel. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's a tremendous documentary called The Long Way Home. I don't see anybody saying, "Yeah, sure, I've seen that. That's really bad." I'm serious. It's one of the most... You can't watch that movie and... Put it this way. You're not the same person after that movie. It simply... It won, by the way, an Academy Award for Best Documentary, maybe like 20, 25 years ago when it first came out. It simply documents the years from 1945, the end of the Holocaust, till 1948, till the establishment of the State of Israel. And it is so clear that there's a correlation. It's so clear the whole world felt bad and they wanted to give us a state. And you know, it is, you can't deny the connection. But when you add to that, that Chazal foresaw all of this and said this is the way it's going to happen, and these are just a few examples. There's many other sources that say it in various different ways, that the troubles are going to be terrible. I'll give you one more example. If you look back on the Hebrew side, source number 7, this is probably the clearest of them all. The Gra, the Vilna Gaon, one of the greatest Gedolim of all history. They say he's a throwback to the Rishonim, a throwback to the Tanoim, maybe even. He was beyond comprehension, let's put it that way. And he writes as follows, "Hagula mechuneh b'shem boker." The Gula is referred to as morning, M-O-R-N-I-N-G. Kemoshe katuv, ata boker v'gam laila. V'chein mechuneh b'shem leida. And the Gula is also referred to as birth. Kemoshe katuv, ki chala gam yalda tzion. Tzion is given birth. Why the comparison to morning, boker, and birth? What's the common denominator? Says the Gra, u'kemo shekodem shematchila ha'ir hayom, just like before daybreak, hu machshich bioter, it is the darkest time of night, the very, very last part of the night before the first rays of the sun come up, is the darkest time of the night, v'chein he'ara, and so too a pregnant woman, kishemitkarevet ha'leida, the closer she gets to giving birth, it hurts more than the rest of the pregnancy. When she's actually on the birthing stool, which means giving birth. In other words, both of these things, mourning and birth, are preceded by darkness and pain. Says the Gra, Kain kodem ha-ge'ula yichbar ha-galut yoter mikol ha-galut. Before the Geula, the Galut is going to be heavier, harsher than the entire rest of the Galut. And no one can deny that the Holocaust was the darkest and the most painful period of Jewish history. Again, I'll repeat what Rabbi Blech said. Is it mere coincidence that in 1945 we were saying Kaddish over 6 million, and in 1948, 3 years even for a regular person is not a very long time. I know at your age it's like, wow, 3 years ago I was in 9th grade or 10th grade. That was such a long time ago. Trust me, when you get older, 3 years passes and like that. But historically speaking, 3 years is less than the blink of an eye. It's nothing. And 1945, and then the Holocaust was over, and then 1948, we have our own state. A lot of people ask me, and they say, okay, so where's the Geula? Where is it? Where's Mashiach? Where's the Beit HaMikdash? Right? It said right after the pain has to come the Geula. That's not what the Gra said. All the Gra said was, after the pain is going to be the birth. When a child is born, is the child ready to go off on its own and, you know, go to college, get married, and have its own family? Of course not. First, you have to change his diaper all the time. Mother has to get up in the middle of the night and feed the baby. And then it starts, you know, getting a little bit older and getting into everything. You have to watch it constantly. And then it hits adolescence, and that's the worst of them all. And it's not until the mid-20s where you could finally sit back and say, oh, Baruch Hashem, you know, she or he turned out okay. You know, they got married and they're having their own family. Baruch Hashem. So all we're talking about was that the birth happened in 1948. That's what it was. It was the birth. What do we say in the Tefillah L'Shalom HaMedina? Reshit Tzmichat Gulateinu. It's not, we're not saying it's Gulateinu. We're not saying it's the Tchilat Gulateinu. We're saying it's the Reshit Tzmichat Gulateinu. The beginning of the flowering of our redemption. Which, you know, it boggles my mind why people have a problem saying that in their tefillot. There was a Rebbe of mine who unfortunately passed away. Excuse me. Pretty young. But he was from Merkaz Harav, and he was a real diehard Zionist. He learned under Tzvi Yehuda Cook. And once he was in America at an ufruf of a former student, and in that shul, they say the tefillah l'shalom medina, but they don't say the words reshit tzmichat gulateinu. So this rabbi walked over to the rabbi of the shul, and if I would tell you who the rabbi of the shul is, you wouldn't believe it because he's a very chashuv rav. And he walked over to the rabbi and he said, why didn't you say reshit tzmichat gulateinu? So the rabbi said, we don't have prophets today to tell us that this is the reshit tzmichat gulateinu. Who are you? Whoever made up this tefillah? Who are they to say this is Reshit Tzmichat Gulateinu? And without blinking an eye, Rabbi Benny Eisner, my Rebbe, said, last I checked, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Amos, he just lifted off all the Nevi'im. Last I checked, they were Nevi'im. They told us, they're the ones who gave us all the prophecies that are coming to fruition, like Rav Ari Kaplan said, right? We are living through the entire range of Messianic tradition, often coming to pass before our very eyes with uncanny literalness. What do we need? What, we need a Nevi'im to tell us what was already said by the Nevi'im? It's clear that it's Reshit Tzmichat Gulateinu. But again, it's only Reshit Tzmichat. It's not even the flowering, it's the beginning of the flowering. And that's what it was. That's what 1948 was. It was the birth. It was the birth of the Geula, which has had its ups and downs, and which also has constantly been moving forward in certain ways. As if we look at the way the state was in 1948, I mean, there's no comparison. You know, someone once put it this way, if you would take somebody from 500 years ago, let's say, I don't know, the Beit Yosef, he lived around 500 years ago, I don't know, any of the Gedolim of, you know, of yesteryear, and you would transport them to 2017, Medinat Yisrael, you would have to spend a lot of time and a lot of effort trying to convince them that this is not Geula. They would say, oh my God, Eretz Yisrael is inhabited. The Jewish people are, at least half the Jewish people are back in the land. The land is built up. It's a world leader in technology and in so many different areas. This is clearly Geula. And then someone would say, no, but it's secular, you know, that the heads of the state are secular. And he would say, that's a terrible thing. But what does that have to do with anything? Well, that doesn't change the fact. You can have a question on God. You know, God, why are you doing it this way? That's actually, there's a whole chapter in A Question of Redemption, one of the most fascinating chapters of the book, about that exact question. Why would God bring the redemption, at least the beginning of the redemption, by way of secular Jews? Why not bring it by way of tzaddikim? So we're not going to discuss that tonight. You're going to have to buy the book to see the answer. So those are the facts. The facts are that there is a clear correlation. Chazal already foresaw it. It happened exactly like the script was written. There's going to be troubles, terrible troubles, the darkest point of history, and then there's going to be a great light. Then there's going to be a birth. It's going to be a renewal. And that's what happened. The question, however, is why did it have to be like this? Why couldn't God just redeem us, you know, the way we want him to redeem us? You know, in a very pleasant way, just call us and say, you know, okay, children of mine, it's time to come home. And without all the troubles and all the hardships and the death of 6 million Jews. So at this point, I want to introduce you to a very, very special sefer, a very special man, Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal. Rav Teichtal, this was the first book I translated. Actually, as I'll tell you in a second, this is an abridged version of it. The real book is bigger. I don't think I have any copies of it here. There you go. That's the big book. You see, our generation is unfortunately unable to read more than I don't know what. That's one of the reasons why I did this book, which, again, is empty now, but will come out tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, is to be a daily dose, a little bit, just a page, around a page, actually an average of about 3/4 of a page a day to learn about Eretz Yisrael. That's all. Don't have to read a lot. People have a hard time nowadays because of texting and because of a lot of reasons, reading long books, which is why I abridged this, which we'll get to in a second. First, who was Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal? He was a renowned gadol in Europe prior to World War II. He was brought up, born and raised in Hungary, which was known for its vehement anti-Zionism. He was actually a student of the Munkacsher Rebbe. The Munkacsher is equivalent to the Satmar. They are as vehemently against the Zionist movement as the Satmar are. And that was his Rebbe, the original Munkacsher, the Minchas Elazar. And he was a genius. He had his own yeshiva already at a young age. He already wrote, you know, Shelot u'Tshuvot. He had 3 volumes of Shelot u'Tshuvot. I mean, we're talking about really one of the Gedolei Hador. And he himself, prior to World War II, wrote letters and articles bashing Zionism. But then he describes in this book how the Holocaust began. And he was hiding out in some attic somewhere while everybody in his town was being rounded up and taken away somewhere where at that point they didn't know where, but they never saw them again. And he started thinking, rethinking, what's going on? Why is Hashem doing this to us? And almost entirely from memory, he reviewed basically Kol HaTorah Kula on this issue, the issue of Eretz Yisrael and the Geula, and he came to the conclusion that we were wrong. We should not have opposed the Zionist movement. The Zionist movement was Hashem's way of bringing us back to Eretz Yisrael. He wants the Gula to begin. And what is the Holocaust there for? And a very large part of the Sefer is discussing, so why is this happening to us? What is Hashem, what's the message that Hashem is trying to bring us? And as I said at the beginning, it's dangerous to give reasons for the Holocaust. But if you're a Gadol like Rav Teichtal, and you lived through and actually were killed in the Holocaust, towards the very end, it's amazing. He actually managed, he escaped to Hungary, and Hungary, as you know, was only invaded in 1944, towards the end of the war. So in 1943, he managed to print a Sefer. I mean, I'm in the middle of printing a Sefer. Baruch Hashem, we're in Medina Yisrael. You cannot imagine. I thought I was going to go there, and it's going to be like, you know, oh, sure, we're working on your book. You know, it'll be ready in 5 minutes. Don't worry. There were about 100 books being printed as I went in. Like there, and that's only one printing press in Yerushalayim, and there is tons more. Torah, I mean, it's unbelievable how much Torah is being produced in Medinat Yisrael. But he somehow was able to print a Sefer in Hungary during World War II, and Baruch Hashem, some copies escaped. Were saved, and that's what we have. And I had the zechus about 20 years ago to translate it, and as I said, also to abridge it into a shorter version. So he unfortunately didn't make it. He was killed at the very, very end of the war, literally January 1945. But during the time that he was hiding out and writing this book, he is telling us what he thinks is the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing this to us. And let's just read a few little excerpts. If you look at the English side again, on the right-hand side, the right column, we're going to skip Rav Soloveitcher's Kol Dido Fake. If you've never read that, you have to read it. It's one of the most beautiful pieces. I mean, this is just the beginning of it. You should really read Kol Dido Fake. You should read a lot of stuff. But anyway, Rav Teichtal writes as follows. And here, basically, we're going to give two or maybe three explanations that he gives why it had to happen this way. Number one, 5a. If we carry out the will of Hashem and fulfill His commandments, if we do everything we're supposed to do, if we're good Jews, redemption will arise amidst prosperity and grandeur. Meaning that redemption would come smoothly. It would be, you know, b'tshuva shlema. Hashem would just save us miraculously in a second. If, however, we do not fulfill His will, redemption will inevitably come, but amidst adversity, distress, and poverty. It has to come. If we don't deserve it, if we're not doing the will of Hashem, so then redemption will still come. Just like in Egypt. Right? Hashem had promised your descendants will be slaves for 400 years, and Baruch Hashem, He was nice to us, and he made it 210, really. He counted the 400 from Yitzchak's birth. But the time came, even though the Jewish people didn't deserve it, He still redeemed us. So here too, the redemption is going to come, but then it has to come amidst troubles and poverty and distress. Why? So the underline here in 5a, because the hardships will serve as a substitute for the merit that we would have had by virtue of keeping the Torah and its mitzvot. Meaning, we need something to be able to say that, you know, we're good, we did something for you, Hashem. In Egypt, it was slaughtering the Korban Pesach and doing Brit Milah. So that, you know, Bedamaya Chayi. That was all we had. That was more or less the only zechut that we had. Okay, there are other midrashim, maybe one or two other things. But Hashem said, okay, that's good enough. That's your merit. We're going to take you out of Egypt. But here, what was the merit? The merit, he says, was the fact that we suffered. Al-Kiddush Hashem. We died Al-Kiddush Hashem. 6 million Jews died and suffered. And even the ones who survived suffered tremendously. That was sort of our ticket to redemption. We needed something to begin the redemption, and that was by way of the hardships. That's answer number one he gives. But then he says something else in subsection B there. Now, If the redemption were to come about while we live prosperously and tranquilly among the nations, there would be many, many of our Jewish brethren who would not want to leave. If everything was going good for the Jews, so then why would they want to pick up and leave? As he goes on and says, what are they lacking here in exile? They are wealthy and prominent, officers among the nations. Why should they care about Mashiach and Eretz Yisrael? They have a Mashiach and a Jerusalem right here. He's referring to a certain Gadol who said, you know, Berlin hi Yerushalayim. The Jews had this, you know, what was it? Vilna was the Jerusalem of Lithuania. That's a terrible thing. Don't ever call another place in the world Jerusalem, because it only causes problems. They have a Mashiach, as we said, in a Jerusalem right here. They do not need a better Mashiach than the one they have. In other words, the reason why the Holocaust or troubles had to happen was in order to get the Jews moving, to give them an incentive to pick up and leave. And he continues on this theme in section number C. Thus we understand from these words of Chazal that the purpose of the pains of exile and the harsh decrees that constantly befall us from time immemorial is to awaken us from the slumber of exile. It is the sound of our beloved, the Holy One, blessed be He, knocking on the hearts of the doors of our hearts to arouse us with a desire and the yearning to return to our Holy Land, which we have disregarded for almost 2,000 years. We needed something to wake us up. And he shares a beautiful, beautiful idea, which is not over here. The pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which says, Mashcheni acharecha narutza. Pull me, and I will run after you. We will run after you. And Rav Simcha Boni Mipshischa, quoted by Rav Tartal, in the name of Bar Yisrecha, says that if you notice, the word Mashcheni sounds like a halachic concept that we know, which is called Mishicha. When you want to acquire an animal, halachically, paying the money doesn't do anything. If you would pay the seller the money, and then the animal would drop dead, it's not considered yours, it's still considered his. But if you gave him the money and you pulled the animal, limshoch, pull it, so then it's yours. And if it dies in the spot, it's your problem, not his. Okay? It's a halachic concept. But there's two ways you could do mashicha. One way is to stand in front of the animal that you're buying and say, here, Betsy, you know, here, come to me. And the second it takes a step towards you, you have acquired it, halachically. But let's say it's a stubborn mule that doesn't want to move. So what are you going to do? You have to make it move. You have to make it start walking in order for you to acquire it. So you walk behind it, you take a stick, and you give it a nice whack on the behind, and then it starts running. But what's the two differences between these two methods of Mashiach? Number one is that in the first case, the buyer is standing in front of the animal, calling the animal. In the second case, the buyer is behind the animal, hitting the animal. And of course, the major difference is in the first case, there's no pain. In the second case, there is pain. Says Rav Simcha Boni Mipshischa, that's what we're saying in that pasuk, Mashcheni Acharecha Narutza. We say to Hashem, do Mashiach, acquire us, buy us back, take us out of Galut, bring us back to Eretz Yisrael. But there's two ways you could do that. We're praying that Acharecha Narutza, we will run after you, meaning you'll call us, and we'll just listen to your, hearken your voice, and we'll just run after you to Eretz Yisrael, we'll run after you, your prophets, your Gedolim, right? And follow your word and go back to Eretz Yisrael. But what if that doesn't? What if that doesn't work? And that's what happened. Rav Tachtal proves from you know, history, shortly before, you know, the Holocaust, there was a whole movement to come back to Eretz Yisrael, even from Gedolei Yisrael. Rav Tzvi Kalisha, Rav Yehuda Alkalai, Rav Hillel Mikalamaya, and many others who were calling for a return to Eretz Yisrael. And people just didn't listen. It fell on deaf ears. So unfortunately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to say, okay, you don't want to listen, then I have to go behind you and I have to hit you. I have to give you a smack in order to wake you up and get you out of this galut, because the time has come. The moment the time has come, just like in Egypt, right? If we would have stayed one moment longer, we would have sunk to the 50th level of Tumah and never be able to come back. Here also, there was a time at which the Gula had to happen. And in order for that to happen, if we're not listening, if we're not doing it willingly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to force us, so to say. So, according to Rav Teichtal, it's because we needed it. We needed a wake-up call. And of course, the lesson we have to learn from this is, you know, never to rely on that. Never to, you know, get into that situation again where we're going to need a wake-up call from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's listen to his call in a nice way when he tries to call us to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and not wait till Chas V'Shalom, you know, things start happening. I heard on the news yesterday about, you know, I don't know if you're following the news in France. So this anti-Semite Le Pen, right, might become the next prime minister of France. So there's all this discussion, you know, is that going to cause French Jews to make Aliyah? And the truth is, yeah, it is going to. It is going to. A lot of the anti-Semitism that's going on right now in France has caused many Jews to make Aliyah in the last few years. And this will just, you know, put the icing on the cake and will cause more. But do we want to be like that? Do we want to have to wait till Chas V'Shalom, something happens? And I'm not one of these people who, like, doomsday sayers and, like, you know, it's coming, you know, there's going to be a Holocaust in America. I honestly don't believe that. I don't believe that it's, at least the way things look, it doesn't look like it's going to happen that way. But you never know. That's the way every other exile has ended. Every other one. The expulsion from Spain, from Europe, from everywhere. We were always tolerated for a while, and then the Goyim said, we don't want you anymore. And the time has come to preempt it and to come back on by our own free will and not wait till HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forced to bring us out. I'll just introduce one more book by way of, you know, these words, my speech, and then, because we're almost nearing the end, there's another book that I had the zechus to translate called Rise from the Dust, Me'afar Kumi. It was written by this young man, Zvi Glatt. Looks like more or less your age, because he was. This is, I think he was 20 years old, only 2 years older than you. Zvi Glatt grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and one summer he went to Bnei Akiva, I think Moshaba or something. He went to some kind of a Zionist camp. And Rav Chaim Druckmann was there, and he inspired him tremendously, to the point where he went home to his parents and said, I'm making Aliyah. Not in 5 years from now. Now. And he made Aliyah, and he finished high school in Israel, and then he went on to Yeshivat Merkaz Harav. While he was in Yeshivat Merkaz Harav, a 20-year-old kid, originally an American, he was a very diligent learner, but he was also very much a loner. He sat on the side, just, you know, writing stuff, and no one really knew what he was doing. And then one fateful Shabbat, it's actually coming up to the Yortzeit, I think it's 37 years ago or something like that, him and a bunch of friends went to Hebron for a Shabbat, and after davening at Marat HaMachpelah on Friday night, they were on their way back to, I guess, Kiryat Arba, and Arab terrorists, Yamach Shemam, opened fire on them and killed 6 young men. If you've ever been in Hebron, there's a building called Beit HaShisha, the House of the Six. He is one of the 6. One of the 6 who were killed. After his death and funeral, his friends started looking around his belongings and his stuff, and they found what he had been working on. He had been working on, this 20-year-old American kid, a sefer that to this day is one of the most important svarim on the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's broken up into 2 parts. There's the hashkafic section, where he basically goes through history and shows how we have always made the mistake of rejecting Eretz Yisrael. Started with the Meraglim, actually started before the Meraglim. But and every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu has gotten very, very upset at us. So much so, this already Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk says, he says, you notice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave the Jewish people for the Chet HaEgel, but he did not forgive them for Chet HaMeraglim. Chet HaMeraglim is worse in God's eyes. And it goes on and on throughout history. Whenever we have an opportunity to take Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity, we blew it. We blow it. We reject it. We say, no, thank you. And he shows how that is a very bad precedent, and we have to change that. That's the first section. And then he goes through the halachic question as to whether it is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And this 20-year-old kid quotes tshuvot from, you know, places that I've never even heard of. There's no doubt that if he'd be alive today, he'd be around upper, in his upper 50s. He would be a very, very chashuv rav, because he was really destined for greatness. But unfortunately, his life was cut short at the age of 21 by an Arab terrorist. So it's a really powerful sefer. I want to conclude with a story taken from another one of my books, although this one I don't have a lot of copies of here to sell, but it's An Angel Among Men, which is a biography on Rav Kook. Not much more to say. It's extremely inspirational stories. Anyway, in there's the following story, which I think will really summarize everything we've said up until now. During World War II, in 1939, the Nazis invaded Poland. And many Polish Jews, and Polish nationals, Goyim also, fled the country to run away from the Nazis. And it wasn't until 1956 that communist Russia and Poland, which was also communist, I think, at the time, made an agreement that anybody who was a Polish citizen as of 1939 is allowed back into the country. Because until then, they were just wandering around Russia. They were, you know, they were refugees for all these years, for decades. And they finally made an agreement that Jews and also non-Jews, everyone can come back and live in Poland. Now, Poland was freer than Russia, of course. So the Jewish agency took advantage of this situation, and thousands of Jews who were stuck in communist Russia were allowed to go to Poland, and they weren't going to, you know, settle back in Poland. I mean, Poland, you were in Poland. Would you want to live in Poland even today? I don't know why anybody would want to live in Poland. But these Jews, at least, were going to simply pick up and, you know, use this opportunity to just get to a free country and then move immediately to Israel. And many, many Jews made Aliyah because of this. So one of the people who were involved in this whole mission, his name was Baruch Duvdevani, and he tells the following very scary story. He says that one morning when he was doing his job, he noticed that there was an old man standing, and it was, I think he said it was 20 degrees below zero. It was extremely cold, and this man was barely, you know, barely had a winter coat. And he was just standing off to the side and asking and waiting to speak to this Baruch Duvdevani. So finally, he went over to him and he said, "Can I help you?" And the Jew said, "Where are you from?" And Baruch Duvdevani answered, "I'm from Jerusalem." And he said, "Did you know Rav Kook?" So Baruch Duvdevani said, "Yes. In fact, I was zocha to study by Rav Kook. I used to go to his shiurim all the time." When he said that, this old man started bawling, broke out. He couldn't, uncontrollable tears, and it took a while until he finally came back to himself and he told his story. In the early 1920s, I was a big manufacturer in one of Poland's famous industrial cities. One day, I decided to take a trip to Eretz Yisrael and spend Pesach there. Being a religious Jew, I visited Rav Kook immediately upon my arrival. That was like accepted. You know, you come to Israel, you come to Palestine at the time, you go visit the chief rabbi, and he was famous, Rabbi Kook. So he went and he visited Rabbi Kook. He welcomed me warmly and encouraged me to seek out the good of the land and consider settling there. After a few weeks of touring, I returned to the Rav and asked him, among other things, what I should do regarding the second day of Yom Tov, seeing that I was a tourist. And you all have this question, how many days of Yom Tov should I keep? So he had the same question he asked Rav Kook. The Rav, which means Rav Kook, answered with a smile, decide right now to bring your family here and to build a factory in Eretz Yisrael, then you can keep one day of Yom Tov already this Pesach, like all inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael. So the man continued in telling his story, and he said, I took his answer jovially, and since the holiday was still a few weeks away, I decided I would return at a later date and ask him the question again. A few days before Pesach, I went to Rav Kook and asked him the question once again. This time, Rav Kook answered sternly, I already told you that you should move here. Then you may keep one day of Yom Tov starting now, even if you must return to Poland after Pesach to settle your affairs. I said, this man is telling the story, I said to Rav Kook, excuse me, dear Rabbi, I have thought about it at great length, but in the end, my intention is to return to the diaspora. How then can I celebrate like the residents of Eretz Yisrael and only keep one day? Rav Kook banged his hand on the table and said with great emotion, your dot is to return. That is nothing but a lack of dot. That's a lack of dot. To return to Poland is a lack of intent, a lack of knowledge, of das. The man continued in a broken voice, I did not listen to the Rav. I returned to the diaspora and remained there. I lost my wife, my children, and my grandchildren in the Holocaust. And here I am today, lonely and desolate. I have come back here with nothing after wandering for years through Russia. And I constantly recall Rav Kook's prophetic words. That is nothing but a lack of dot. It is complete, in my humble opinion. How could we be living in such special times and not do something about it? And not actually pick up and make Eretz Yisrael this great gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us in our times and make it our homeland. You know what? It's been so many years that I've, you know, been talking about this and writing about it. And Baruch Hashem, there are people who make Aliyah every year. Baruch Hashem, more and more Jews are making Aliyah, but it's still a drop in the ocean. It's not enough. We really have to make up our minds to do it now, as soon as possible. I shouldn't say now, because I didn't do it now. I didn't do it right after my year, but I made sure to stay inspired. And the way I did that, we read the Rav Aryeh Kaplan, as we started with today. When I came back from Israel, my year, I don't want to give away my age, but how many years ago? 30 some odd years ago, okay? There was nothing in English on the topic of Eretz Yisrael. There was nothing. And I was so desperately needed inspiration to keep up, you know, the hope and the dream to come back to Eretz Yisrael. I found Rav Aryeh Kaplan's article, and I read it over and over again. There was another article by Rebbetzin Youngreis that I would read over and over and over again, and it would inspire me. But I read the same thing 100 times. I decided, when I made Aliyah, that I'm going to try to change that. And Baruch Hashem, I've done my share, but Baruch Hashem, there's other people who have done a lot also. There's so much material out there in English now. And really, the reason I did this is not to make money. It is to give you something so that you could take with you when you go back to America, if you have to go back to America or wherever, England, Canada, Australia, did I miss anybody? Wherever you have to go back, something that will keep you inspired. And I already introduced a bunch of my books, A Question of Redemption. It really has all the answers to the questions why we believe this is the beginning of the redemption. It only costs 20 shekel. In stores, it's 50 shekel. As I said, I'm not out to make money. I'm out to make sure that you can afford the books and buy them. Rise from the Dust, I used to also sell it for 30 shekel. I'm going to also make that 20 shekel. Eretz Yisrael in the Parsha, I did not yet discuss this one, but this is also a very inspirational book. Many people have told me. I have many stories of people who have told me that they made Aliyah because of this book. We don't have time for me to tell the stories, but there's plenty, and it's a very inspirational book. And I just reprinted it, by the way. I have 1,000 copies, so don't worry. You can buy one without any worry that there won't be any left for anybody else. I literally just today got 1,000 copies. This is only 40 shekel. In the stores, it's 90 shekel. I sell it for 40 shekel because I want you to have it. The full version, I don't print myself, so I have to sell that for 70 shekel. And over the years, I saw that less and less people are buying it because 70 shekel, oh, chas v'shalom. If you go out for dinner for 70 shekel, that's worth it. But, you know, to buy a book for 70 shekel, come on, I'm not going to waste my money. So, therefore, we put out an abridged version, which is sponsored. So it only costs 10 shekel. Okay? There's no reason why anybody should leave here without one of these books. Okay? What else? And then there's A Drop in the Ocean, which Bezrat Hashem will come back a different time. I mean, I would take a list if people want it, but I think you should see the book itself before you decide to buy it. So anyway, this one is 70 shekel. I can't. This also I don't print myself. The book on Rav Kook. So let's review. 20, 20, 40. 10, how much is that all together? 40, 50, 90. And 90 for 4 books. Where can you ever get 4 books for 90 shekels? So please, anybody who's interested, see me over there. And thank you for your time.